You're listening to Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks and co-host Angelia Savage. We seek to help you relate well so you can live well in all aspects of your life.
Welcome to the show that will change your life for the rest of your life. This is Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks, and I'm your co-host, Angelia Savage, and this is a show that's going to help you connect. It's going to help you communicate better with everybody around you, because when you learn to communicate better with one another, we stand in our power, and ultimately, we become a better spouse, a better parent, a better employee or employer. Basically, we just become a better human being, the one that God always intended us to be. And this is why Relate Well was created with Dr. Rick Marks. He has a true passion to continually help others become the best version of themselves while relating to each other. And also known as Dr. Rick, welcome to the show. How are you doing this evening?
I'm well. I'm relaxed.
Well and relaxed.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
I had a wonderful time today just pouring into someone that I'm mentoring.
Yeah.
And he gave me the most wonderful benefit.
And what was that?
He let me drive his Tesla.
Oh, I'm expecting something so profound.
It was like the most interesting experience.
Was that?
It was fun.
Uh-huh.
I can see why people want to get them.
Uh-huh.
Like his giant iPad screen in the middle on the dash.
Yeah, so
but then he showed me how to let it drive itself. He goes, now take your hands off the wheel. I'm like, no, go take your hands off the wheel. And it was driving by itself.
How'd you like that?
It was freaky, but fascinating at the same time. It's like this sense of hesitation.
Uh-huh.
Because you don't feel like you have the control.
Right.
Right? You're turning yourself over to something else.
Yes, sure.
But at the same time, it was doing it. And it was monitoring all the cars that were passing by us. I went.
And it didn't make any mistakes?
No.
Wow.
Not at all.
That's fascinating.
So it's like, it's still in my head, you know?
Yeah, that's on the bucket list checked off.
Yeah.
Next.
So that was kind of interesting.
That's amazing. Oh, wow. That's so, I was just going in my mind and I'm thinking, if you have control issues, that's probably a great starter kit for you to start to let go of control.
Yeah.
Allowing a computer to drive itself. And you have no control.
Yeah. He and his wife did my intensive to save their marriage. And, of course, we teach skills.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his history is a fighter pilot and helicopter pilot with U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me today, he goes, when I'm in a cockpit, he says, I have my, my checklist on this knee and I have my emergency checklist over here. He goes, what you gave me was a checklist. He said, if I don't know what to do and things are burning, he goes, all I got to do is go to the checklist and I know exactly what to do. And I was like, that's a great metaphor for the power of the skills he's learned. He's actually actively using the skills to regulate the emotional energy so he can keep in us, together and protecting us. And I was like, man, you're teaching me something today.
Yeah, he applied it to other areas of his life. That's amazing.
He saw it as a value. So that was really, it was meaningful to know that you've impacted someone's life.
Yeah.
In such a way that it's making a difference, that'll make a difference. So that was kind of neat.
All right. Well, let's transition into impacting some more people's lives.
All right.
Because we have some good questions that came in. And as you know, we start the show with a few questions that Dr. Marks has never heard before. He has no idea what's coming his way. And it always helps everyone. It helps people that write in, but it also helps other people that are listening too. And, lots of times we learn from other people's mistakes or questions.
Yeah. And then you get whatever I'm thinking in the moment.
Which is always very interesting. So we always need your candid answers. So
Fire away.
Let's start with Sasha in Tybee Island. I'm not sure how you say it. I think it's Tybee, but it's Tybee Island, Georgia. And she says, when a guy tells you he doesn't want to get married when you're dating him, but then he gets engaged to the next girl he dates, what does that mean? He didn't want to marry me, or was it just all about timing, or was the girl that much better than me? This has happened to me 3 times now, and I don't understand it. So please help me, because I don't want to be the one who gets married, not the pre-marriage relationship girl.
Wow. Well, one, I could never answer that question because I don't know what was going on in those guys' heads.
Okay.
So you really can't. But what I can say, based on what I'm hearing from the question, is she is assuming, and it's really an assumption, that she's the problem, that there's something about her, that she's dated these guys and they're choosing the next person, not her, and that somehow that's about me.
Well, I think that's kind of fair to assume.
Well, the brain, all right, think about it this way. If you're at work and your boss comes in and says, I want to see you in my office in 20 minutes, what's the first thing you think?
Uh-oh, what'd I do?
It's the same thing here. We assume the worst.
Yeah.
Automatically. But it may not be. Next thing you know, you find out you're getting a promotion. But our brain always goes to the negative first. I don't know why, but it always does. My brain does.
Oh, when so everyone does.
Everyone tend to do that. We always tend to see we tend to see something as negative rather than seeing it as a possibility as positive, right?
Right.
It could be that God is sparing her from three jerks.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah, look at it in the positive light there.
You don't know, right?
He wasn't the right guy.
But her brain's making assumptions about her.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? And I can't tell her why they do what they're doing, but I can hear in the statement, she's making assumptions about her. Now, if she knows it's a fact it's about her, then she needs to work on whatever that is. You got that? If you know for a fact it's about you, then you need to work on those parts, because then you're acknowledging, yeah, I am creating this. But it sounds like she's not creating it, because I'm going to make an assumption as well. I'm sure she's dated other guys who did not do that.
I think because it's maybe repetitive. I mean, I'm actually even thinking of a girlfriend of mine who has kind of along the same lines of this. She's dated and dated and dated, and then she never turns out to be the girl that they marry. She's the one that they've dated before marrying.
So questions I would ask her is, if she thinks about her, questions I would ask is, what message are you sending them? Have you sent them a message that you're not interested? Have you sent them a message that I'm not really here for commitment? Have you sent them a message, whatever? Have they told you things about you in the dating relationship that would lead them to not want to consider you as a possibility? Those are questions I would start to ask of that person to get them to think. If you think it's about you, then here's some questions to begin to ask myself to see if I am creating something.
Yeah, get to the bottom of the issue.
Exactly.
If there is an issue, there may not be. Like
that's
you said,
my
it
point.
May be their issue. Maybe the
may
guy's
be you're
issue.
Just finding guys who aren't committed, but then they find someone who, you know, think of it this way. You have actually changed their lives, so they finally realize they want to be married and want to be committed.
Mm-hmm. You know, funny, my girlfriend that actually I'm speaking of right now that's very similar to this situation that Sasha has, she always wants to reach out to the person that she had dated that it didn't work out with. She always has to reach out to them via text or phone to ask them, was there something that I did wrong? And it drives me nuts when she does this, honestly. But there's so many women, and maybe men too, that they want to learn from their past experience, and they want to know if it really was them or if it's something they need to tweak or change in the next relationship. Do you think that that's maybe what you should do or shouldn't do?
If they're already married, don't do it. But if they're not married, you know, say, hey, listen, we were dating. What was it? What was your experience like with me dating?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you ask the question, you cannot get defensive with the answers.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you get defensive with the answers, you just justify to them they're right and not sticking with you, right?
She does. She gets defensive, and then she wants to explain and justify and say, that's
the
not
reality
the
case.
And she wants the relationship to start over.
And then if she's doing that, then what I'm saying is you just validated them not to do that. Because when you ask somebody information about yourself, when you ask for input,
right,
you should never get defensive. If you get defensive, what you really said is, I don't want input. Then what'd you ask for? Oh. If you don't want input, if you want input, don't get defensive. But if you ask me for input and I give it to you, you get defensive, then let's be honest, you really didn't want input.
And defensive meaning angry or justifying or
no.
Just responding?
If I say to you, Angelia, tell me what I'm doing that is causing this disruption. And you go, Rick, you're doing A, B, C, D, and E. Oh, I am not. What is it?
Okay.
In the moment, you just learn you didn't really want to know, Rick. You really didn't want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And I also just taught you the next time I ask you for information, you've learned not to give it. Why? Because you really don't care about what I think, Rick, because you get defensive. So I tell people, you ask for input, don't get defensive.
Double whammy right there.
They may tell you something you don't want to hear.
Uh-huh.
And here's the thing about truth. Truth isn't always pleasant. Truth is sometimes very painful.
True.
When I had to learn the truth in my younger days that I was manipulative, I didn't like that. But you know what?
Did you get defensive?
No, because I owned it.
You did. Okay.
Now, in the earlier days before I was changing my life, yes, I would, because I didn't want to hear it, right? Because it's a mirror of who I am, and I don't want to admit those parts of myself. But when I really began to transform my life, it's like, all right, Luella, you know, how am I coming across right now? Manipulative. you know, to take a deep breath, you know, control that parasympathetic nervous system and to take that deep breath. And I would say, well, what am I doing at sending you that message? And she'd say, well, A, B, C, and D. And then I'd say, well, forgive me. Because if I'm sending you the message I'm being manipulative, please forgive me. I don't want to ever send you that message. And I'd shift it and try and do it differently.
Is that always right, though? That so say she is saying you're doing X, Y, and Z wrong, or is that maybe just her perception or her
maybe
she's not correct.
Listen to my phrasing.
It's how she feels.
Listen to my phrasing. If I'm sending you that message, I never agreed with her. In other words, think of it this way. The way we think we come across is not the way we do come across.
Oh, so true.
Right?
Yeah,
the way
that's
I think
true.
I'm being experienced, not the way. So what I'm actually defending then is how I think I am. Well, she's not picking that up because she don't know how I think I am. She just knows how I am. So I've learned if I'm coming across a certain way, I can own how I'm coming across. I wouldn't want to send you the message, Angelie, that I'm manipulating you or don't like you. Why? Why would I want to defend that message? If I'm sending you that message and then I get defensive, what I've just said to you is I don't care that I'm sending you that message. I do care that I send them. I don't want to be that guy. So I can go, well, forgive me for sending that message.
That's mature.
That makes sense. It is. And it allows me to stay centered in who I am and not take other people's stuff personal. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you go, Rick, you're coming across manipulative, in that moment, I get to assess, I use it this way, to any degree, on any level, am I being manipulative? And if I think about it, I go, you know what? I think on some level I am being manipulative. Forgive me. I'm not aware of that right now, but I am now. I don't want to be that way. And I can own those parts and change them.
And what if the other party truly doesn't feel as though what you're being accused of or they're sharing with you or their perception of you, what if you just truly feel that that is not the case?
Then I would say, you know what? I can respect that's how I'm coming across to you, and I will own how I'm coming across. However, that is not my intent. It was not my motive. And that's actually not what I'm saying, but I do respect you're hearing it that way.
Okay.
Now we're at it. You would feel the impasse, right?
Yes. Yeah, so you
moment.
Feel heard. You
and
feel
then,
understood.
You're right.
Even though you're disagreeing
and
with
yet,
me.
And yet you'd feel an impasse in that moment. And then I would say, well, then, Angelique, can I tell you what I am trying to say, what I am trying to do?
Okay.
I would ask for permission, and then what I'm actually trying to do is this.
Okay.
And I'm trying to let you be aware of that. And you go, oh. It's about understanding and communicating well.
Mm-hmm.
You see. And so we kind of got off topic with Sasha, but I think on some level it applies to what she's saying because she's making assumptions that these things are about her. It may not be. But if there are things she's doing, and then they tell her and she gets defensive.
Mm-hmm.
All she's doing is convincing them they made the right decision to not date her.
Oh, no. And then everything blows up.
Well, yeah, so because if you keep getting defensive,
yeah,
that means you're immature still and you're not willing to get input. Why would I want to live with somebody long term who always gets defensive but who's not willing to look at their dark sides in a sense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it really is about maturity.
It really is.
On both sides. To be able to communicate on both sides.
Yes.
So
very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so.
All right. Well, here's a question for you.
All right.
Not for you, for our listeners. Have you ever wondered if there's a secret to a healthy marriage? Well, there actually is a secret. And after the break, Dr. Rick is going to tell you what it is. So stay tuned to Relate Well with Dr. Rick.
Dr. Richard Marks is a licensed professional counselor and clinical fellow with the AAMFT and an ordained minister. His education and training is exemplary. He holds a PhD in counseling psychology and a master's in marriage and family therapy, as well as religious education. Throughout his life, Dr. Rick has taught graduate school, managed psychiatric hospitals, held private practice, and is a U.S. Navy veteran. He has served as commissioner on the Florida Commission on Healthy Marriage, as well as started the statewide Healthy Family Initiative in Kansas under Governor Brownback. He is an author and founder of the Relate Well Relationship Skills Program. As the founder of Relate Well, Dr. Marks provides singles, premarital and married couples the tools they need to lead a healthy, mature relationship.
And we teach skills for attachment. We teach skills for bonding. We teach skills for confiding, for communication, problem solving. We'll even teach you how to regulate emotional energy so you can be angry instead of not.
In addition, he trains in corporations and organizations the essentials of emotionally healthy leadership. He's been featured as a guest on numerous TV stations and radio shows in Jacksonville. Dr. Marks resides in Jacksonville with his wife, Luella, who have been married since 1984, and they have three adult children. If Dr. Marks can serve your organization, business, church, or if you're seeking help through counseling and coaching, visit drrickmarks.com or relatewell.us or call 904-724-8683.
Welcome back to Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks. I'm your co-host, Angelia Savage. And earlier in the show, we answered a few questions. Well, actually, just one question for the entire segment because it was needed. And now we're going to, I don't know, just turn the page a little bit. And we're going to talk about healthy marriages and what it takes. Before we closed, I said there was a secret to a healthy marriage. And I've heard in the past, I think I've shared on a previous show, that as long as you're never out of love at the same time, you're going to have a healthy marriage life and you're going to stay together. And that's not necessarily true for everyone, but I just heard that once from a wise man that told me years and years ago. And I've always, always just, I don't know, made that a mental note. And I think as long as you're not out of love at the same time, then that's what's important. But there's other things that are really the secret to a healthy marriage. So share those with us.
All right. So, you know, in our world, particularly in Relate Well, we talk about the most important part of marriage is not the husband or the wife. It's us. Us wins, you both win. Us loses, you both lose. Two to make an us, one to kill it, right? So it's when both people value the idea of us, right? It's the relationship itself. You know you have an us. You feel it when you have it and you feel it when you don't. But in the word us, if it's spelled U and S, what's the first letter?
U.
If you want a healthy us, you got to be a healthy you. It's real simple. In other words, I cannot give to a healthy us if I am not a healthy me. You see? And so what is most significant about a healthy relationship is that the individuals who come together to create enough, they're both healthy and mature. You see?
Well, that's a perfect world.
Not necessarily. Think about the word I use. Perfection is not a possibility.
Okay.
All right? If it was, Jesus had no business dying on the cross. We could save ourselves.
Yes.
However, he doesn't call us to perfection. He does call us to maturity. Now, maturity means I don't have to be perfect, but I can be what? Mature.
Mature.
And a mature adult is what we're really called to. It's like Paul says, when I was a child, I spoke like a child and acted like a child. When I became a man, I put an adult. I put away those things. Sadly, today in America, we have mostly emotional children raising children. And because we don't have, most of America is mostly immature adults, they cannot create mature relationships because you can't create something if you're not it to create it. In other words, my parents were not healthy, mature adults, right, at the emotional level. And so they could not raise their children to be mature adults. Because you can't give somebody something that you don't. So in my own journey of transformation, Angelia, when I realized that, my goodness, I'm emotionally a child. And that's why I dealt with things in childish ways as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized if I don't stop this, I'm going to pass this down to my kids one day. And so if I want a strong, healthy marriage, I better become a strong, healthy me.
And how do you go about doing that? How do you become a strong self before or during marriage to try and make a marriage better?
Well, of course, biblical principles are all in there for us to look to. But that's, you know, that's like, okay, well, that's a Bible verse. Great. The practical app is, you know, don't be hearers of the word, but doers. What I did, and I think it was a good path for me. I got people in my life who mentored me. All right. Dr. Lori Gordon. He doesn't know he mentored me from afar, but Dr. David Ferguson, his work. But then there were men like Marshall and Dudley. And those two men became like father figures to me. And they loved me enough, and I trusted them enough, that they would speak into me the things I did want to hear about me too. But I knew they did it because they loved me and cared for me, so I'd listen to them. Secondly, because I valued my transformation, I would read personal development books. I would go to trainings. I began to immerse myself in learning about my brokenness, my woundedness, and I began to drive my own transformation because I did not want to be the immature person anymore. I want to be the mature person. Why? I want a good marriage, and it's all dependent on whether I am healthy and mature. And so I started to drive my own transformation for many years, even before Luella was. But even though I was changing me, I was changing us just because I was changing how I was reacting, I was responding now. I was being thoughtful. I was being patient. I was being kind. And what emerged for me were my four words, the four protectors: goodwill, respect, humility, and empathy. I became those things. And as I became those things, I matured, and then I could give to the marriage in mature ways.
You've got to be willing and open for change to develop maturity. And I think it was a key point that you mentioned that you had some mentors, people
yes.
that you looked up to, people you respected and wanted to learn from and improve because of.
Yes.
And today's society and our culture, a lot of people don't have that. They may have one parental figure, but maybe not so much anyone else.
Yes. Matter of fact, you see a lot, particularly in the church, accountability groups. I don't like accountability groups myself. I'm not saying don't have one. Only because I've learned that in my early days, I would lie to those. And people lie to accountability groups. I'm a counselor for 30-something years now, 31 years. People lie to accountability groups. What I did, I borrowed from the world of personal development, and I created a mastermind group. I don't know if you heard that term or not, but it's in the personal development world.
Like a think tank room?
Or in a sense, a mastermind group is when you put people that you know and trust, but they own the parts of your brain that you don't own. They think different than you. Right? They can see the world differently. And you put three or four of these people around you. So it's not that I'm holding myself accountable to them. What I am saying is before I make a decision, I go to the mastermind group and I hear all of their perspectives. And they're giving me the way that they're thinking the way that I'm not thinking. They're giving me insights from a prism that I don't usually have so that I can understand this thing bigger. But here's the thing. Sometimes they're not focused on the issue. They're focused on what I'm doing in the issue. Well, Ricky, you thought that maybe because you did this and this, this is like, I never saw that. Yeah, you might want to look at that part of you. And it's like, okay. So when you put a mastermind group around you, you're not accountable to them in terms of your behavior. Mm-hmm. What you are saying is, I am humbly submitting myself to you and I'm giving you permission to speak into me.
Let me say this, though. I'm picturing this and I'm thinking, women, we do that. We do. We mm-hmm. don't have a problem with doing that. We don't have a problem sitting at lunch and going, well, what do you think I should do? What do you think about this? If I present this scenario, do you think I'm coming across this way? I think women are a little bit more open with that. Maybe not open with, you know, receiving constructive criticism, not mm-hmm. always. But at least we do have people around us that we can ask, that we want to know from, I guess, want to know their side of the story. You as a man, mm-hmm. I can't really picture you're boating, you're golfing, you're at church. I think that's a really tough thing for a man. I could be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong, to say, you know, dude, I mean, I'm really thinking I need some good people around me to tell me what your perception is about this scenario. And I want to improve on this. I think that's a little bit of an anomaly. Am I wrong?
For most men, yes.
Okay.
But those who tend to go into the personal development world see it as a value.
Oh, I definitely see a value.
It's very much a value. And it's not that I go to my friends.
That's hard, isn't it?
It's not that I go to my friends.
Okay.
The people that I put around me, they might be a friend, but they may not. They actually might be a mentor, or they might be a business associate that I know. I would like for you to be a part of what I'm calling a mastermind group, that if I am struggling in some area, could I call you and you have the freedom to say whatever you want to say to me about it? Even if you think I'm doing something wrong. I go, sure, Rick, I can do that.
Yeah,
you see what I mean?
Everyone wants to feel valued in that way. So that's a wonderful thing to ask someone.
Yes. But what they're hearing,
you're a man of integrity. Can I ask you certain? I think
yes.
that's
would
amazing.
You be a part of this for me?
Mm-hmm.
And most people would say, yeah, I could do that for you because
mm-hmm.
it's not really requiring a lot. But what you are saying to you, I am submitting myself to you to speak into me. And if you think I'm doing something wrong, you have the freedom to say that as well. And I will consider it. But ultimately, the decisions are mine.
Mm-hmm.
You see, And I found as I, like my brother Don, he's part of my mastermind group. And my brother Don will text me, goes, I think that statement there on Facebook was not appropriate. I think you should take it off. I'm like, okay.
He's right.
You know, then I'll do that, right?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And I appreciate that about him because he's my best friend in the world, mm-hmm. but he's also he's a level 5 leader based on Jim Collins' work. He's at the highest level of emotional intelligence. He has the credibility to speak from those things. See what I mean? Mm-hmm. Paul Robertson, my wife, and about 3 others. They're the people I go to. Lori Gordon was one. You know, she's passed now. But those are the people I can go to and get, give me feedback, give me insight. So the healthier I became, the better of a man I was. And the better I loved, you know, there remains 3 things, 1 Corinthians 13, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Mm-hmm. I actually began to mature in love. And because I matured in love, my marriage matured.
Mm, okay.
So when I became mature, I could love maturely. And when I love maturely, us becomes a natural outgrowth.
That's a mature marriage.
Exactly. Which requires mature individuals, right?
Right.
And that's the great secret. You become a healthy, mature adult. Now, the gospel of Jesus should drive you to become a healthy, mature adult. Mm-hmm. Sadly, at least in my opinion, when you look at the church, particularly our evangelical churches, are high in broken families, are high in divorces. What you're actually finding is people have faith, but they don't have love. Not matured in love is probably a better way to say it. I tell people the goal of discipleship is not to increase your faith. It's for you to mature in love. That's really the goal because the greatest is love. When we mature in love, then we represent God the Father's heart to the world really well. But more importantly, you represent it with credibility and integrity at home.
Well, let's talk about representing marriage.
Okay.
And there is 3 types to actually represent a solid, skilled marriage.
Yeah, three aspects of being safe.
So safe environment being the first one.
Yes.
Tell us
about
that.
So there's, if I become this healthy, mature person, right, then I create safety. And there's 3 areas of safety that a person has to have. All right. In other words, Luella has to feel safe that I am committed to the marriage, that this relationship is free from. It's what God says. I will never leave you nor forsake you. That's commitment safety. But you don't have to ever worry about whether you're going to be rejected or abandoned or thrown away. He will not do it. Same thing in a marriage relationship in particular, but all relationships, right? I need to know that you're committed and dedicated to this thing till the end, till death do us part. If I don't sense you're fully committed, then I don't feel safe that you're really going to be here one day, all right? Twice early in our marriage, first 8 or 9 years, Luella threatened to leave in an argument. And I'm thinking, how in the world do we go from here to that? You know, I told her early on in our marriage, you are leaving, I'm going with you, right? So first is commitment safety. Second is emotional safety. And that's the big one, all right? Luella always felt safety with me, and that I was committed, but she may not have felt safe with me emotionally because I was immature. I was manipulative, those kind of things. But you have to have emotional safety. And the third one is physical safety, that you are free from harm, from domestic violence, from being pushed, things being thrown. And when I feel that when I feel safe that you're committed, I feel emotionally safe with you, which means I can be vulnerable and I know that you won't hurt me physically, then I can blossom, I can grow, and I can mature.
All right. Well, we've got to take a quick break now, but I do want to touch on, there was one thing that you just said. So when we come back, we're going to touch on that.
Sounds good.
But I do want to also let everybody know about Tuesday, April 20th, 2 days away from now, from 6:30 to 8 o'clock, we're going to host another date night with Dr. Rick and Luella, his lovely mm-hmm. wife, at Aladdin Grill. All you have to do is come join us for some food, fellowship, and inspiring words from Dr. Rick himself. And that's at Aladdin Grill. It's at the corner of Beach Boulevard and St. John's Bluff in the Winn-Dixie Shopping Center.
Here in Jacksonville.
You got it. Good food, good fellowship, and lots of good friends. So stay tuned to that and stay tuned for us. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Relate Well with Dr. Rick.
A healthy, nurtured relationship is key in making your life whole. Yet for most, that perfect relationship is elusive. In Relationships for Life, marriage and family counselor, and acclaimed speaker, Dr. Rick Marks, offers proven principles and skills for caring and mature relationships. Dr. Rick shares personal experiences from growing up in a broken home and how vulnerability led to healing in his own life. The book is a unique perspective packed with faith-based and clinical insights for making a relationship work. Relationships for Life is for anyone who wants to create and maintain healthy relations in every aspect of life. Available as a digital download in hardback and paperback on Amazon and in the web store at drrickmarks.com.
Welcome back to Relate Well with Dr. Rick. I'm Angelia Savage, your co-host, and we just had to sign off quickly, unfortunately, because I wanted to ask a couple of other questions. You went through the mastery skills and the three types of safety in a relationship that will make a healthy marriage.
Right.
And the first one that you touched on, you were talking about feeling safe and feeling commitment safe.
Right.
So as long as you're committed, you feel safe. Did you mean commitment marriage, or did you mean commitment just I'm committed to you, I'm in this relationship forever? Mm. Which did you mean with that?
Great question. I hadn't thought about it that way. That's why I love you being our co-host.
Yeah.
You kind of hear things.
Uncover.
Yeah,
I
you
uncover.
Do. We'll make you an FBI profiler, right?
Yeah, right. Oh, that'd be a great job. I would love that.
All right. So that's a great question. In this sense, because we're talking about marriage in particular, then it's a commitment to the marriage. But really, think about it. In this sense, it's not just to be committed to the marriage, it's to be committed to the individual. You see what I mean? Since we're an us. So if I'm committed to the marriage, I mean, what I'm saying is I'm committed to Luella. I'm committed to the relationship. So I think in that sense, for me, my brain thinking about it right off the top of my head, one is the other in a marriage relationship. Make sense?
Okay.
In other words, if I'm committed to the marriage, it means I'm committed to you. Now, in the positive sense, got it? So in this sense, though, I think what the research is showing and saying is, I need to know that you're committed to me and the marriage, all right? That it's the a part of the vow that says, till death do us part, in richer and poor. That there, in no, if I get sick, you're not gonna leave me, right? If we're going through a rough time, you're still here. That's commitment to this relationship, got it, the marriage. And when I feel secure, you're committed to the relationship, in a sense, I also feel you're committed to me. All right. I think they kind of one flows from the other. Mm-hmm. Now, you've just brought up another conversation, though, that I think we need to share, because research shows there's actually two forms of commitment in marriage: commitment by devotion and commitment by constraint.
Oh, what's the difference?
Commitment by devotion is internal, intrinsic motivation. In other words, I feel love for you, Angelia. And because I feel that love for you, that feeling of love, that feeling of devotion is the commitment. All right?
Okay. All so right. I'm committed. Feeling of love is my commitment.
Yes. Because
okay.
I feel it. So
okay.
I'm committed because I want it, right?
Yes.
I'm driving the commitment because I have all these feelings for you. Commitment by constraint is extrinsic motivation. In other words, I'm committed to the relationship, but it's because God hates divorce. Or maybe it's because I'm fat and gray, nobody's going to want me now. Or maybe because divorce is going to cost too much and we don't have the money. Or maybe because if I do, I'm going to disappoint my family. In other words, commitment by constraint are external motivators that keep you in the relationship, i.e. married, but I'm not really committed to you or us, just to this legal piece of paper we have.
Mm.
That's commitment by constraint.
Commitment by misery.
It is. And if you think about it, if you had a commitment by constraint, you don't really feel there's a commitment to us.
You don't feel anything.
Well, you'd feel pain, you'd feel hurt, you'd feel danger, you'd feel like this person's a threat to you. And I would say, well, no, I'm in this thing, but it's only because of the kids. In that moment, there is a commitment issue because I'm saying I'm committed to the legal contract because of the kids. But to you and I, to our usness, I don't have a commitment to it. Now, let me say this. Commitment by constraint's not a bad thing in the short run.
Short run meaning how long?
I don't know. 2-3 months, maybe up to a year, as long as you're getting help to get devotion back.
Got it. Okay.
And so it was commitment by constraint keeps you in it when a part of your brain goes, oh, just throw it away and run away. It keeps you in there. But you don't want to stay there year after year after year. You want to get devotion and feelings and commitment back. That's why our Relate Well intensives are so successful, is we take people who've lost that love and feeling, who are in commitment by constraint, and we help them get the feelings back and give them hope they can sustain it.
Yeah, because commitment by restraint, I think, would be commitment turning into resentment. Does that make sense?
Yes. Or you could say, when you are in commitment by constraint, there is a form of resentment already present.
I could see that. I could definitely see that. Because
yes.
You're feeling it's constraint. You have to stay.
I have to stay, and I don't want to be here.
And don't want to be there. Yeah.
Yes, very much so.
You have to stay at your job, but you don't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's just you resent going to work, getting ready for work, being at work, the people around you. You know, I would relate that exactly the same way in a relationship. It would just, you would start to resent the people and everything in that relationship.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I didn't want to say, but I thought you would even maybe have resentment towards your kids in some way because you're having to stay because of your children.
I'm assuming that's a possibility. I've not seen that because I've not seen that, but it could be a possibility that I'm only here because of you. And if it wasn't because of you kids, I wouldn't have to be here. Your father, or with your mother, whatever.
Yeah.
I could see that too. And I hadn't thought about it that way. I haven't thought about it that way. It's an interesting idea to postulate. It would be possible, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
For some people, I would say this to the person who's listening right now, who may be in commitment by constraint. I love that you picked this up and brought us here, because this is a nuance I don't usually talk much about. To the person that's listening right now who's in commitment by constraint, first thing I would tell you is go get help, right? Our Relate Well intensives are designed to get you unstuck and to help you see if you can get that devotion, that feeling of love back. You know that old song by the Righteous Brothers, "You've Lost That Love and feeling, right?
Yeah.
You know? Whoa, right?
Yep. But wait, you need to come in alone to try and work through, or
you've got to come in as a couple.
As a couple. Okay.
You've got to come in as a couple.
You're working towards a devotion,
so you need to devote
together.
Exactly.
Okay.
We want to create a shift where you can start to feel a sense of connection again that gives you a sense of hope, that you can get that sense of usness back, right? If commitment by constraint is not a bad thing in the short run, but you don't want to stay there and live there.
Yeah, because you were saying more than a few weeks, a few months. That's maybe understandable for certain reasons and circumstances. But then in the long run, it's just killing everything.
Exactly. The longer you stay there, the more miserable you become. An example, there was a couple we worked with out of Wisconsin. At the time, it was a 42-year marriage.
Mm-hmm.
They had lived in separate bedrooms for almost 30 of those 42 years, all right? They wouldn't even walk around the same side of the island in the kitchen. That's how much they didn't like each other.
Oh, wow.
Years of therapy.
30 years of that.
30 years of that's commitment by constraint.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to therapists, nothing changes. They approach divorce, but back away, mainly because of the kids. Eventually, they decided they're going to divorce. It's done. And somebody said, hey, why don't you go visit this couple at this church who are marriage mentors? Well, those marriage mentors are dear friends of mine, and they know all of my work inside and out. So they met with Paul and Jerry. And Paul and Jerry met with them for 2 hours and just taught them one of my skills.
Which one?
The touch point skill.
Us. Okay.
The idea of the touch point, which is thing is share something you're grateful for. It took that husband like 45 minutes to think of one thing.
Oh, no.
He was grateful for. Can you imagine that wife sitting there? But that had been their life. But Paul said, after about 45 minutes, he says, I'm grateful that you dress nice.
Wow.
Now,
that was nice.
When you talk to him today, they're actually helping save marriages in their church. They're in their 70s, late 70s now.
Uh-huh.
When you talk to him today, he will tell you the moment he said that, something shifted in him.
And her, I'm sure. Both of them.
It was nice for her to hear it, but she started to wrestle with it. It took 45 minutes for you to come up with something. But for him, internally, he thought he had nothing he was grateful for. But the fact that he felt it and said it made a shift for him. And they started investing and saved the marriage, and now they get to save marriages in their church in their later years. And his name is John. And John said to me a few years ago, he goes, Rick, I will tell you, we did not start out well. And most of our life, we didn't live it well. He said, but we are going to finish well.
They're ending well.
They
ending
are.
Ending on a great
and
note.
And I just gave him a hug. I said, way to go, buddy.
That's amazing. Well, I do. So you called it the touch point.
The daily touch point skill.
It's a
skill for confiding. And the first part of the touch point is share something that you're grateful for. And every day we tell people, share something that you're grateful for about your spouse, about your kids, about your friends. If you're an employee, share it about your coworkers. If you're an employer, every day, share something you're grateful for about your employees. Let them know. Let them hear it.
I think that's so wonderful. I think we need to all practice that in every relationship we have.
That's our touch point skill.
That's the best part of today. If anything you do at all with your relationships at home touch point theory. I like that.
And when us is strong, you're committed.
Yeah.
That's devotion.
Devotion. Yep, that's exactly right. All right, well, on that note, we're going to head out.
Okay.
Okay, well, you're listening to Relate Well with Dr. Rick. We'll be back after this break.
To have and to hold from this day forward. Your wedding day was the biggest commitment of your life. Relationships change over time. Needs go unmet. Communication breaks down. And half of all marriages end in divorce. If till death do us part has become a challenge, then it's time to reconcile and reconnect. In his 1 to 3 day marriage intensives, Dr. Rick Marks coaches couples in distress back to their love and hope for a future together. Dr. Rick's intensives is not traditional therapy. Marriage intensives give couples the skills for communication, problem solving, emotional regulation, as well as the skills for healthy bonding and much more. Intensives empower couples to create the marriage they desire with Dr. Rick's Relate Well principles and tools, keeping couples out of the divorce graveyard.
I realized many years ago with the team that I work with that if we could teach people those skills for bonding and reattachment and communication and problem solving and emotional regulation and much more, it gives you the hope again, which can lead to the goodness and the love and the feelings and the intimacy so that you win. Your usness, your marriage wins, and your kids win.
87% of the couples who participated in Dr. Rick's marriage intensives reconnected their love for each other and remained married.
If you want to take the opportunity, you have the will to do it, you want to do it, and you want to save it, we'll show you how.
Intensives are cheaper than a divorce and much more meaningful. Save your marriage. Reconnect your love. Save a generation and secure your future. For more information, visit drrickmarks.com or call 904-724-8683.
Welcome back to Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks. I'm your co-host, Angelia Savage, and we just left off with some really good thoughts, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like where we went towards the end of the last segment, but right now we've got to, I think, maybe backtrack a little bit, and let's talk about marriage. We talked about marriage and the secrets to marriage and happy marriage and healthy marriage and, you know, really worrying about yourself and being a happy self.
A healthy self
first,
can lead to a healthy us.
Happy and healthy before a marriage, you know, relationship.
Right.
And that solidifies your marriage. So if you're healthy, I'm healthy, we're healthy together.
And us is healthy.
And
very
then
much so.
Us thrives. And we're devoted to our relationship we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But now let's talk about where marriage came from and really the basis behind marriage.
And this is where, from a Christian worldview, this is where the Christian theology of marriage comes into play. And you don't hear a lot of this teaching much in Protestant circles, but you will still hear this teaching in the Catholic Christian church. Protestants started to walk away from this back in 1930. It's a whole nother story. But the idea is that marriage was given to humans because marriage is the only relationship we actually enter into that ultimately images the Trinity. All right, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. If you think about it, the God himself, though he's one God, he's still three parts, right? God himself is a family, right? And because God, in essence, is a family, then he himself, in his family, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, you notice they never undo their usness. They never undo their usness.
All intertwined.
It is, because they always yield to the whole. Make sense?
Yes.
Because they will never, ever, ever undo the us. I was with a bunch of pastor friends of mine a few years ago, and they had a conversation about, well, what would have happened if Jesus didn't go to the cross? And they had like a 30-minute conversation around this.
30 Andrea. Minutes? That could take all day.
And I didn't say a word. I'm thinking, this is the dumbest conversation.
Uh-huh.
And they finally asked, what do you think? And I said, y'all don't want to know, and I won't go into all that back that part. But I made a comment, this is the dumbest conversation I've heard for 30 minutes. Like, what are you talking about? I said, you think about what you're saying. If Jesus did not go to the cross, he undermined the Trinity. He would never undermine the Trinity. That means disunity. Disunity is where Satan hangs out. Unity is where Father hangs out. Jesus said in John 17, I pray that my body might be one, connected, unified, us. And so marriage is the only relationship that we actually enter into that images the Trinity, all right? And so if you think about it from a biblical worldview, and there's much more deeper theology behind this. I'm kind of giving a thousand-foot worldview there, Angelia. When people see Llewellyn and I and how we love each other, how we interact, what they're actually seeing is the image of God or the image of something else. In other words, the culture today is not seeing the image of God in most Christian marriages because our divorce rates in our broken families are so high. And it's like Jesus said, he prayed that the body might be one so that the world will know that Jesus was sent by the Father. Well, the world doesn't know that Jesus was sent by the Father because all they see is disunity. If your kids grow up watching mom and dad go to church, but you bicker, you're mean to each other, you're disrespectful to each other, and then you go and talk about Jesus' love, your kids know there's an integrity problem here. You talk about Jesus' love, but look how you treat each other. Why should I believe it either? They're misrepresenting the Trinity to the world around them.
Because God intended us to be man and woman together, married.
Yes.
And as we are kind of married to God.
Yes, very much so.
In front of God, to
because
God.
Because that's the idea of Christ in the
so
church, right?
We're a reflection.
We reflect
together,
his love.
Together, we reflect him.
His love.
Okay.
Now, think about it this way. A little bit deeper. I know we have a lot of time in this last segment here. But, you know, people think, well, you know, that person's this, that person's that. It's true. Before Adam was alive, he was just a physical being, and then God put a soul into him, right?
Yes.
And so this kind of goes back to, we talk about a healthy you is healthy us. So a body without a soul is called a corpse, isn't it?
Yes.
All right. But you can't see a soul, you can't smell it, you can't touch it, right?
No, nothing.
So a soul has to have a body to express itself, right? People say humans are spiritual beings. Humans are not spiritual beings. Demons and angels are spiritual beings. So what are humans? We're spiritualized human beings. We have something that spiritual beings don't have. We have a body. In other words, we can embrace. We can have hugs. We can enjoy mint chocolate chip ice cream. Demons and angels can't. We have a physical body, but our physical—
Repeat that. So we're not spiritual beings.
We're spiritualized human beings.
Spiritualized human beings.
In other words, we are human beings who have a fleshly body.
Yes.
That a spirit was put into.
Okay.
Spiritual beings have no physical body. They're just spiritual beings, angels and demons.
Okay.
Now, a human is not alive unless he has a soul. When the soul leaves the body, that's called a what?
Corpse.
Corpse. Now, here's a key. What a person does on their body is nothing more than a reflection of their soul. Because the soul has to have a body to express itself. Before the fall, Adam and Eve could not lie with their physical body. It's impossible. After the fall, you can lie with your body. I can say, oh, no, I really do love you, Sally. That's why I want to have sex with you. You're lying with your body. You don't love her. You just want to have sex. That's a reflection of my soul. So what my body does on a regular basis is not my body. It's my what? It's my soul. And that's a reflection of who I am. Because what I do on a regular basis reflects my soul. And if two people have not transformed their souls to Christ's likeness, to mature in love, then they cannot reflect in their marriage the Trinity. But they are reflecting something. It's the opposite of the Trinity.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? And so marriage—
I've never thought of this way. It's complete. I say it's kind of over my head, but I'm computing everything you're saying, and it's making sense as I'm hearing it. But I've never actually thought of things this way.
it's not taught much anymore in Protestant circles, sadly, particularly evangelical circles. Mm-hmm. Most in the West, we say marriage is meant for you to love each other and worship God and be happy. And I go, actually, marriage is actually intended for both of you to mature in love so you can reflect the image of God, the Trinity, to the world. Mm-hmm. That's really what it's for. Mm-hmm. And as we reflect the image of God to the world, then people see something different in you. And I will get a wrap up here soon. I'll leave it with this example. I would not be married today if it wasn't for Mr. and Mrs. Muzon. All right?
Why is that?
Because Mrs. Muzon convinced my wife that she needed to give me a try when my wife had wrote me off for 2.5 years as a dating partner.
So you owe everything to them.
And they're a 60-something year marriage, phenomenal people.
Uh-huh.
And many years ago, Mrs. Muzon was like a mom to her. And she always called Mom and Pop Muzon. But many years ago, we were at church, and you always saw these young couples around the Muzons. And one day we were walking past them, and Luella said, "There's always young couples around them." And I said, "Yeah." And she says, "Isn't that interesting?" I said, "No, I think it's phenomenal." She said, "Why?" I said, "It's because what you don't see is those young couples are close to Muzons. Why? Because what those couples don't know is they see divine love in them.
They want it.
And they want to be them.
They want to emulate.
And if I can get close to them, it could rub off on me. It's all unconscious to them.
Yes.
But they want to be them." And I told Luella, I said, "That's how I want us to be. That later in life, that young couples flock around us." Why? Because they're going to see something different in us. Loving, mature, deferential, strong. And they're going to come by us and go, "How do you all do it?" And we can go, "Well, let me tell you about my Jesus." You see. But that's what I'm wanting for her and I, that our relationship becomes a symbol of Trinitarian love so that the world will go, "What is it about you two?
I want that."
That was the Muzons.
Yeah, because you want that. Whenever you see that, you can see love in someone.
Yeah.
You can see it in a couple. And I love to just sit and watch, and you can see and you can feel the love from someone else giving it to someone. You feel it. I mean, I feel it with my parents. I felt it with my grandparents. You feel it.
You do.
And it's just such a wonderful feeling. You want it. You want to feel it. You want to have it. You want it for yourself. And that's so important. But there was one speech that you gave, one lecture that you were talking about, and I know I'm bringing this off the cuff, so I may have to jog your memory a little bit. But it was a story that you talked about an Indian guy.
And I don't remember it.
And this Indian guy was talking about Christians and the way that the Muslims in his community thought of Christians and marriage. He did not. He grew up in a community that he did not want to be a Christian or like Christians in marriage, because the way that the Western world thinks of Christians is they see a lot of divorce.
Yeah, I'm remembering something about that now. Thank you for that. You're right. He's catching me off guard there. I had forgotten about that story.
And that was a really good story, I thought, because the way that the other worlds look at us as Christians and seeing us divorcing more and more over time, that affects them and what they feel about Christianity.
Yes, that's the idea. That's what I'm talking about right there. He watched those marriages on the mission field fail, and he realized, wait a minute, why would I want their God? If their God cannot even keep a marriage together, or those people won't follow their God to keep it, why should I do that? It's like Gandhi said, "I would be a Christian had it not been for Christians." Mm-hmm. And Christians over here get defensive about that. I mean, the fact you get defensive about it just proves what he's saying is right. Why not just move to humility and go, "You know what? We really have messed up, haven't we?" That's more powerful. Just own those parts of ourselves that are actually unhealthy and go fix them. But our defensiveness just proves to the world, you're right. See, you can't even accept those things that are true about you. Yeah. I had forgotten about that. Thank you for bringing that to memory, because I'm like, I remember that now.
Yeah, because as Christians in this society, everyone is leaning towards divorce just because just because they just can't fix one issue or two issues.
No fault
divorce.
And they
let it go for so long. And so you're not following in God's spirituality and you know, Trinity. You're not following in
right.
His theology and staying married as Christians.
And I think it's because, at least in Western culture, we've lost the teaching of marriage being linked to the Trinity. And because of that, we have no idea of the theological underpinning behind why marriage was in the first place. And the picture of God in marriage is throughout the Old Testament and New Testament. Israel in the Old Testament is known as an adulterer. That's a marital term. Of course, in the New Testament, we have Christ and the church, right? Groom and the bride. So you see that throughout. And that's what we've lost. We've lost that teaching.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get back to it. I feel it coming, and you're going to make sure of that. And if you would like to learn to lead a life through the four protectors in all of your relationships and learn how to develop the tools that create us in your marriage, us in your family, or even us in the workplace, then register for the online Relate Well Core program. You can register for Relate Well as a single or couple, and all you have to do is register online today at relatewell.us. And if you're looking for private relationship counseling or life coaching from Dr. Rick, then call 904-724-8683. That's 904-724-8683. Well, this has been another informative show from Relate Well with Dr. Rick Marks to help you live the best life that you can. And remember, until next week, relate well to live well.
We want to invite you to visit relatewell.us. Whether you're single or a couple, come learn what a healthy relationship looks like and then put it into practice. For relationship counseling, contact Dr. Rick at relatewell.us.
Relieved, how precious did that